Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week I'm joined by Trenton Moss, leadership coach and partner at Team Sterka, an author of Human Powered, the book that shows you how to collaboratively solve problems, resolve conflict, and inspire others. Trenton, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Hey, Danny. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. So before we start today, Trenton, could you quickly introduce yourself and what it is you're doing for the listeners?
Sure. So I'm the founder and head coach at a business called Team Sterka, and which means that basically I spend my days running people skills programs for digital teams. And the idea is that as a business, if you kind of want to move forward, if you want to have high performing teams, you know, obviously when it comes to digital, we're now delivering products in an agile environment, working in cross-functional teams. And what I've seen over the course of my career is that a lot of the guys within this team aren't quite there in terms of their people skills and their emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so I spend my days running programs to help those guys kind of, you know, up their skills in those areas to become high performing teams and increase the quality and the velocity of how they ship those digital products. I'm also author of the book, it was a best-selling book, which was very exciting for me, very exciting for my mother as well, of a book called Human Powered. And there I basically talk about the skills that digital products teams need to be successful in this modern era. Not the kind of practitioner skills, you know, nothing to do with here's how you do product management, or here's how you do design, or here's how you do engineering, but much more, here's how you work well in the team, and here's how you need to interface with the business to be a successful team and to ship better products.
And what got you into the book writing mold? What made you actually finally sit down and write that book? Because everyone thinks they can write a book, but not many people.
Well, actually, Danny, everyone can write a book, and that's what I realized, because I've got no writing experience before other than blogs or white papers. Anyone can write a book. You just need to kind of be motivated enough to do it. Mm-hmm. But what prompted me? So I spent my whole career essentially working in digital, and the majority of that was running my own consultancy. So we'd work with, you know, all sorts of brands on strategy pieces, digital transformation, the usual kind of, you know, making digital work better for them. And as time went on, there was this gradual shift from, you know, working in a waterfall way, a siloed waterfall way, where, you know, the BAs gather the requirements and, you know, create a 200-page document and hand them over to the business, who then give it to the designers who design something, ignoring half of what's in the doc because there's too much. And they then chuck it over to the engineers who build it and kind of ignore what's in the design because it's too difficult to build. And obviously we shifted from that to agile working ways and cross-functional teams. And as brands were doing that gradually more and more as part of their digital transformation, I could just see with all our clients that the guys in the team didn't have the skills they needed. They, as I kind of mentioned before, they suddenly, you now had a designer and a couple of engineers and a product manager and maybe a BA and an agile coach all thrown in a team together and very, very different people. And they don't know how to work well together. Yeah. And then the other thing that we're asking these guys to do, which we never asked them to do before, was you need to interface with the business directly. You now need to go and talk to your business stakeholders, and you need to influence them to do things in a certain way that's going to achieve their goals. And they don't have the skills either. And I just saw this more and more and more. I thought, well, this is, and we were working with our clients more and more to help the teams to do this, as well as kind of, you know, actually doing the work. And as it went on, I was just, this is a problem, and everyone talks about it as a problem, and no one seems to be solving it. And so after I exited my consultancy, I thought, well, A, I could start a business around this because this is a problem everyone has, and B, I can write a book on this because I kind of have done a lot of work to come up with what the solutions are, and no one seems to be talking about the solutions, just the problems. So I wrote the book and came out last year, and it did all right.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was reading on your LinkedIn page, it's the most useful book on people skills since How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's not a bad book to be compared to.
Yeah, That was nice.
Yeah. So before we get into the topic today, I was going to ask you, if you had an extra hour in the day, a 25th hour, what would you do with it?
That's a great question. Oh, there's just so much. There's work. I mean, I could just work another hour because your work is never done. There's always more to do. And, you know, I spend my days running a small business, which means that while I wish I spent all of my time running the programs, I spend a big chunk of my time doing sales and marketing.
Yeah,
and all the admin that comes with running a small business. So I'd love to have another hour in the day to just run my programs. Because that's where I get my energy from. That's the thing I enjoy the most. I'm really passionate about this stuff and around developing everyone's emotional intelligence. So I guess my conclusion is either A, work more, or B, spend more time with my family, which, you know, would also be quite lovely. So maybe I'll do half an hour of each. Half an hour extra work and half an hour family time.
There you go. So, Trenton, we're going to talk today all around the people part of digital transformation. It's the crucial element. And as you mentioned just now, it's a huge problem teams have and continue to have today in the workforce. And they often focus and hone in on the technology, don't they? We've got to have the latest kit, the latest tech, but that's just not how it works. So how do you develop high-performing teams with low levels of friction and high productivity? What do you need to do?
Yeah, it's the million-dollar question, right? How you get every team to be high-performing. I mean, there's two parts to it. Actually, there's way more than two parts to it, but let me just talk about the two parts that spring to mind. First of all, everybody needs to have the practitioner skills. They need to be able to do their job properly. So for engineers and designers, for example, you know, generally they've come up in that environment. You know, there's a lot of product managers out there who are very new to product management. So, you know, product management manager, you could say, is a PM, and they've been PMs before, but they've been project managers, and brands are moving previous project managers to product manager, and it's a big change. It's a big shift in mindset. So there needs to be a lot of work making sure that, you know, the guys running product know what they're doing and really have that product capability. Same then applies for business stakeholders. Business stakeholders have to understand the change that is needed to move to, you know, more modern ways of working and, you know, working in an agile way. And it's not that, okay, well, here's exactly how long it will take, and here's exactly what will go live, and here's the exact feature set that will happen, and here's how it will work. And it just obviously doesn't work that way anymore. So everyone needs to be able to do the kind of the doing side of their job. They need education on. But then the other part, which for me is the thing obviously I focus on, is the people side of things. So there's a really interesting study that Stanford and Harvard University did, a joint study, and they found that 85% of job success comes from well-developed people skills. 85%, it's a remarkable amount. And the problem that you've got in most organizations is people don't have the people skills to work in a truly collaborative way. And everyone's got the best of intentions, don't get me wrong. And, you know, you've got plenty of really generally successful people who are doing well. But even so, when you look at people's emotional intelligence, not that anyone thinks that they score low, but it is low. And people are just unaware often of the impact that they have on other people and the things that they do and that they say and what that then translates into the other person's emotions. And they're often unaware of the things that other people are doing that then negatively impact them. And, you know, you might feel a bit annoyed or frustrated or angry, but you never like boil down to truly understand why, so you can then kind of, you know, work through it. And what you get as a result of this is just relationships gradually over time just not being as strong as they could. Mm-hmm. And that creates massive, massive issues. And the phrase I always love to say is, you're always going to get more output from a high-performing team than a bunch of individual toxic rock stars.
Yeah.
And we have to get to a point where everyone is able to understand themselves, understand each other, and work towards true win-win outcomes. And then, I mean, the amount the business will move forward at that point will be fantastic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I liked your point there around high-performing teams rather than toxic rock stars, good way to put it. there are teams though, right, which have some toxic people on them, or you know, maybe do hold everyone back. What when you go in, or when you work with teams, or maybe from your experience in the past, what's the best way to approach that if there are people on the team that are actually holding it back, or you know, they just have those kind of big egos that are really difficult to work with? How do you best approach those types of people to make sure the team is most high performing and highly productive, because they really can have a hugely negative knock-on effect on the rest of the team?
Absolutely. It there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
Right. So but the thing that can work well is if you want everyone to go on a journey together of increasing emotional intelligence and improving people skills, then everyone has to go on that journey together. Mm-hmm. So it's got to come from the top, from the leader of the team or the leader of the organization even, and it's got to percolate into the culture. And it's, guys, we're going on this journey together. So if you just like point the finger at you, you're one toxic rock star, say you need to get better, nothing's going to change, right? Because everyone's got the best of intentions. No one sets out to be, you know, horrible to people or to have a negative impact on others. We're all just trying our best, basically, to get along in the environment we're in. So you can't just kind of point the finger at someone and say, it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
So what I find works really well is to, this is like a bigger task, what I find works really well is to take everyone on the journey together. Say, right guys, we want to get better at working together. We want us all to be really high performing. We want to get all of our emotional intelligence improved. We want to be constantly working towards win-win outcomes. So whatever you need to do to succeed, I want you to take a stand for that.
Yeah.
And whatever your colleagues need to do to succeed, I want you to take an equal stand for it. So if all of us are focusing on what we as individual needs and what the people around us needs, and we focus on those equalities, well, we're all going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go in with that mindset to everyone, and then you do whatever intervention you think you might need, which could be team training or various workshops, seminars, whatever it might be, you know, obviously to fit in with your job, where you gradually educate people as to the way that you want things to be and the way that you want people to behave to each other. Yeah. You know, plenty of organizations come out with their values and their behaviors, and it's all written in a doc, and then, you know, everyone just gets on with their work, right?
Yeah.
And so what's the point? The leadership has to live and breathe this stuff.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you can then bring everyone up together, and your individual toxic rock star or person with a big ego or whatever can hopefully come on that journey with everyone else.
Yeah.
And emotional intelligence and all of the people skills, they're all just skills.
Mm.
And with every skill, you've got a mixture of your kind of like, you know, whether you're innately good at it or not. So, you know, I would have loved to have been a professional football player, but you know, no matter how hard I practiced, I didn't have the like innate ability. So you've got your innate ability and you've got the ability to learn. And so anyone can, not everyone is going to get amazing at emotional intelligence, right? Not everyone has the innate ability, that innate skill, but everyone can improve and everyone can get better.
Trenton, when you say, I know this might sound really simple for you, but when you say emotional intelligence, can you break it down for the listeners? I mean, what's the magic sauce? How does that look for someone when you say that they need to have more? Because it gets branded around, you know, emotional intelligence. But what are we really talking about in terms of emotional intelligence?
Yeah, so emotional intelligence is basically all about understanding other people and understanding yourself. So for yourself, it's all about, you know, what motivates you, how you like to communicate, you know, understanding the impact that you have on other people.
Got it.
And then it's about understanding other people, and that's more the empathy side of things.
Yeah.
And it's about getting where people come from. So,
yeah.
You know, we get frustrated by colleagues and, you know, family members and everyone in our life. You know, regularly. that's just life, right?
Yeah.
People do things that can upset, frustrate, or annoy you. And as I kind of mentioned before, it is, no one really intends to do that. No one goes into a meeting with you with the objective of, right, do you know what? Today I'm going to really annoy Danny. My sole objective for this meeting is to rile Danny and get him really angry. Like, that's just not it. People have, you know, the best of intentions generally, yet we see people's behavior and we judge them on their behavior, and then we can't look beyond that.
Got it.
And then what happens is relationships gradually start to deteriorate. You see, the thing is, Danny, if I go into a meeting with you and, okay, maybe I don't have the intention to rile you, but I do end up riling you, you're going to get annoyed at me and you're going to carry that weight on your shoulders. You, whatever, you'll forget about it and it'll be fine, but it's still there. And then the next time you see me, I maybe I do something similar, but you'll be like, oh, Trenton's at it again. He's doing that thing to annoy me.
Typical and Trenton. Then
typical Trenton. And then every time I see you, you'll be looking for it, right? Yeah. You'll be like, and then I might be really polite in the next one because I'm in a really good mood. Mm-hmm. And I'll say maybe one tiny thing that if anyone else said would be like, whatever. Be like, oh, well, there he is. He's at it again. And then the relationship just, and then I pick up on those vibes, right? Because you can always pick up if someone's annoyed at you, you always pick up on those vibes.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, well, Danny doesn't like me, so I've got to go on the defensive with him. And and the relationship goes in a downward spiral. And, you know, in large organizations, you multiply that by whatever, a million potential relationships that are in there. This is what causes all of those stakeholder politics and those petty disputes and the grievances, and this is what holds things up in organizations. There's another thing I like to say: no digital product failed because of bad code. It's always the people, and it's always a communication thing, and it's not because anyone sets out to jeopardize things. It's because someone is communicating in a way that doesn't work for the other person. And we all have to accept it is no one's fault.
And that's what often sometimes the big incumbents, for example, maybe the incumbent banks or maybe just big business, they look to some of the tech companies, don't they? And they think, we need to be more like a tech company. You know, they do things differently. They have the best technology. But often it's the tech companies that have the ingredients right internally, don't they? People with the emotional intelligence that you're talking about, they're more inclined to take risks. They foster that kind of creative, innovative culture, and that's why they get things right. It's not because they have the better technology.
That's exactly it. Like, digital transformation is such a terrible way of describing what you need to do. Although, to be honest, I can't think of a better term, so it's here for now. But it's nothing to do with digital. It is about taking on the practices, processes, and cultures of the businesses born in the digital era. So the likes of, you know, Google or Amazon, exactly as you're saying, they set themselves up differently. They have a different operating model to the traditional businesses. And the traditional businesses have historically had a very hierarchical structure where decision making is done right at the top and everything needs to kind of move up the hierarchy to get done. So, you know, good ideas that typically come from the people on the ground because they're on the ground, they're at the coal face of it. All of those good ideas just go nowhere because they have to work up through 10 layers of bureaucracy to have a decision made. And by that time, it loses all momentum. And the companies in the digital era came along and said, that's a terrible way of working. You know, let's scale a new business and let's create something a little bit different here. And just like you're saying, they set themselves up for innovation, creativity, psychological safety, all those ingredients that make a successful organization. And, you know, Amazon has a great thing where if you have a good idea, you don't have to get a sign off from your manager. You have like some like a couple of hundred senior managers, any of whom can sign off your idea and give you funding. So you go to your boss first, maybe, and your boss is like, nah, I don't like this, hopefully in a more polite way. Like, okay, but I still think this is a good idea. I'm going to find another manager that's willing to sponsor this. And you only have to find one person. You don't have to go through this whole hierarchy.
Yeah,
and that's how these... Yeah, and that's how these ideas flourish. And then there was that really famous, well, I guess in my world, famous study by Google quite a few years ago now, where they were like, right, we need to understand why these teams over here are so high performing and better than all the others, and why those ones over there are less high performing and so on and so on. So they did it. It was a massive study. They did a 2-year study to try to understand why their most high-performing teams were so high-performing. And they, you know, they thought it would be like, you know, the mix of people that you have in the team, or maybe the stuff they were working, you know, the projects they were working on. And turns out after 2 years, there was only one thing that all these teams had in common. And it was very clear from the conclusion, all of these teams have it, and those ones that are low-performing, none of these teams have it. Therefore, it is clearly, this is the one thing that creates high-performing teams. And you know what that one thing was? Psychological safety.
Yeah, makes sense.
If you can create psychological safety, people feel safe and able to voice their concerns, to voice their opinions, to put forward their ideas, and you get better products as a result.
When you've got that fear of saying the wrong thing, putting your foot in it, or just getting berated, you're much less likely to speak up.
Yeah, you say nothing. So, yeah. You know, big boss comes up with an idea that, you know, maybe some ideas are good and some aren't, but, you know, there's an idea that's not that great, and no one says anything. Yeah. So the idea just gathers legs, and you just, okay, well, I'll just put my head down, keep quiet, get on with it. When it all goes horribly wrong, it'll be, you know, it'll be their fault, not mine. Like,
yeah. That also goes back to the emotional intelligence as well, doesn't it? If people have that, then you have that culture of safety.
That I mean, it completely ties in with emotional intelligence. That as a boss, because many bosses do want feedback from the team. Because if you come up with some random idea or some suggestion, you know, you want it to be the best it can possibly be. And obviously, if you get input from other people, it can only improve it. Like, even if the input is completely rubbish, it will stay, you know, the idea will stay the same. It won't evolve. But so the worst case scenario is your idea won't get any better. And the best case scenario is it can improve a lot. So clearly, getting input from other people is a really good thing. Having people tell you their concerns about it so you can think about the what ifs that maybe you didn't think about before.
Yeah.
Clearly, all of this is good. But for some people, they create an environment where people don't feel that they can pipe up.
Yeah.
And you're just going to get worse outcomes as a result. And that's just obvious. And again, exactly as you say, it ties back to emotional intelligence, because the people that do create those environments, they don't realize it. No one does that intentionally.
Mm. Yeah. So Trenton, how do people, if they're listening to this and maybe they just want more people skills, more emotional intelligence on their existing teams, or maybe they're looking to bring new people into the team, and again, sometimes the trap you fall into is you look through a CV and it's all experience. It's really hard to pull out the softer skills from CVs sometimes, and even at the interview stage, how do you kind of marry the two, and how do you make sure you supercharge your teams with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I mean, in terms of recruitment, then of course, the interview process, there needs to be, you need to have questions and exercises in there where you're trying to assess a person's level of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And a lot of it can be, you know, you can have kind of stuff in there that's you know, certain tests that are like, you know, that explicitly elicit that. But it's also kind of, you can get a feel for it by the way that someone answers. Because when they talk about things, how do they talk about other people in the interview? So do they kind of talk about other people quite at a high level, or do they talk about how, well, this other person I was working with on this thing, like this product I put live, they were really concerned about X, and I ended up meeting with this person every day for 10 minutes to cite their concerns, to understand what their issues were, to find out, you know, where their concerns were. And we worked through it, and I got that person on board, and we became a really great partnership, and we're still friends now, or something like that.
Yeah.
You hear answers like that, you're like, okay. Yes. They get the people side of things. They're willing to take the time to understand where someone else is coming from. You see, if someone's putting up a barrier to what you're doing or getting in your way, it's not because their objective is to get in your way. It's because their objective is something else. They want to achieve something, and they're worried that what you're doing is going to make it harder for them to achieve that. So you've got to find out, what is it, this thing they're trying to do, and what is then their concern? And then how do you come up with a win-win? So you're able to hit your goal, and they're able to hit their goal. And so it's just listening out for those kind of things in the recruitment process. You can get a feel for kind of how much they understand themselves and how much they understand other people.
Yeah, I guess as well, making sure that you're asking open questions that give them the opportunity to give you an example of things they've done, rather than jump. I often find that people jump to conclusions, don't they? They don't give people that room to maneuver sometimes in an interview, and you don't really get what you need.
No, I agree with that. Well, you know, isn't there that thing that you make your mind up in the first 30 seconds in an interview?
Yeah.
And then you spend the next 59 minutes and 30 seconds looking for answers they're going to give to justify your initial opinion.
Yeah, precisely. So I guess as well then, Trenton, in your team then, outside of recruitment, so in your team, how do you bring make sure you're bringing this out? You touched on it before around the kind of toxic individuals, but is there anything you can do with the people you've already got in your existing team to make sure they are, you know, supporting one another, they're building this kind of safety culture, it's an innovative place where people aren't scared to voice their ideas and concerns?
Yeah, I mean, the number one most important thing beyond anything else is that the boss, whoever the leader of the team is, has to lead by example.
Yeah.
And this is, it's kind of not rocket science, I guess. It doesn't matter what interventions you bring in, what you write down in your values docs, what you do in your team days. If the person at the top, if that person is not displaying emotional intelligence, is not creating psychological safety for the people, you know, that he or she interacts with, if that person at the top is, you know, putting down people's ideas, then that culture percolates through to the team. So the number one most important thing is the leader needs to live and breathe this, which means that the leader should be ideally getting executive coaching, perhaps, not necessarily all the time, but some of the time, in order to, you know, develop their emotional intelligence and their understanding of themselves. Perhaps go on some executive training courses around kind of modern leadership, i.e. not, you know, we're not command and control anymore, and leadership's all about enablement, to make sure that person can live and breathe best practice in terms of emotional intelligence, allowing the team to flourish. And that's the first thing to do. And then once you've got that in place, you're generally heading the right trajectory after that, generally, because you'll then start to recruit people that are similar to that, that have those beliefs. You'll look for people like that in the recruitment process, and it'll gradually come into the team. But you can't leave it. That's not enough. That will generally get you, hopefully, in the right direction. But that by itself isn't enough. And again, it is then, it's about kind of bringing in a sustained program to help people continually understand themselves more and understand the impact they have on people and develop their empathy skills so they can understand each other better. And that's, you know, like a lot of businesses do lunch and learns and things like that. And it's about continuously doing things like that to show as the leader, yes, I'm living and breathing these values and this way of being, but I want all of us as a group to keep learning and keep getting better at it. So every single lunch and learn is going to be some different topic on emotional intelligence or people skills.
Right.
And we're going to devote this amount of budget to going on training courses that we can do, and so on and so on. And again, you ideally don't single out individuals to tell them you're really rubbish at this, everyone else is great, go on a training course. You can do that, obviously, in a more, you know, slightly more polite way, slightly more emotional, intelligent way. But ideally, you'll go on it together, because, and this is something that I do in my business, is it's about groups going on the program together, and that's what I found over time, is that when you put individual people on training courses, it's fine, they learn a few new skills, but they go on it, they come back the next day, they got a mountain of work to do that they missed for a day, and they just get back into the job, and a week later maybe they've remembered a couple of things. You often don't get big change when you do something by yourself, and that's the power of the whole group going through it together. Because then if you can have everyone go through it together, it keeps the conversation going, and everyone keeps reminding each other of what they've learned, and then you start seeing people put into practice what you learned. So you're constantly getting reminded of it, and then you all kind of lift up at the same time. It's a really nice way of doing things.
It's those shared experiences, isn't it? And everyone getting better incrementally together, and being able to support
which is really
another
important.
In the trenches, isn't it, almost?
That's exactly it. And with all of us, you know, with so many of us working remotely, creating those shared experiences is difficult nowadays. You know, it used to be a shared experience could be, you know, a few of you would go for a drink after work. And that just doesn't really happen so much anymore. Like, shared experiences are reducing. And this is making it harder for people to work together. So doing something like this creates a really nice shared experience that can hopefully positively impact everyone.
And the leader has to be intentional, because, as you say, the chances for people to do this kind of organically like they used to are diminishing. So it's really on the leader now.
Yeah,
great advice. So Trenton, how can how can companies do you work seamlessly with business stakeholders to ship successful digital products and services?
A lot of people working in kind of a digital product environment can get quite frustrated by business stakeholders. Yeah. Not all of them, but some business stakeholders you find frustrating because they basically say, right, here's what I want. I've drawn something up in a PowerPoint slide. Just build it. This is how it needs to be. And that's obviously very disempowering.
Yeah.
But it's also for that business stakeholder, it's kind of how they've always worked, right? Because, and that was how things were done back in the day.
Yeah.
And yes, times have changed. But for that business stakeholder, it's like, well, I've got these targets hanging over my head and my bonus depends on that. So I need to control this to make sure that I do everything I can to hit my target. And that's where a lot of business stakeholders come from. And you can kind of empathize with that, except a lot of people in product teams don't empathize with that. And they get really frustrated because they say, well, you're not allowing me to do my job here. Yeah. I'm the expert in creating digital products, and you are. You're an expert in your part of the business, and you're telling me how to do my job. And then, you know, obviously the friction sets in. It's that downward spiral that I talked about before, and the relationship suffers.
Yeah.
And actually, what if you're working in a digital product team and you're struggling with some business stakeholders, you've got to start by showing empathy. You've got to push aside your feelings of upsetness and frustration and anger at what they're doing, because, as I kind of keep talking about, they're not setting out to hijack you. They're not setting out to annoy you or frustrate you. They're just trying their best to do their job. And they're doing it in a way that doesn't work for you. And that's not okay for you. But for now, push that aside and start showing empathy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where are they coming from? Why are they behaving this way? What is it they're trying to achieve? And
is it also how are they KPI'd and what's their bonus, right?
Because
if they identify that, then all of a sudden, oh, okay, this is the information they need and this is where they're coming from. I completely get it now. That's the bit that maybe gets missed, right? Like you mentioned in the beginning.
That's exactly it.
It's almost like the customer problem, isn't it?
We are so brilliant at empathizing with customers nowadays and so terrible at empathizing with stakeholders, because we just focus on that on their you know, bad behavior. And bad is in like air quotes, right? We focus on the things they're doing to negatively impact us. And as I said, you have to look beyond that, no matter how frustrating it is, and take your time, as you're saying, Danny. Understand KPIs. It's not just KPIs. It's understand, like, emotionally where they're coming from. And look, you're not going to sit down and have a counseling session with them, but if you can spend some time with them, just try and understand their state of mind. You know, you're not going to ask them outright, oh, how are you feeling today? But just by having a conversation with them about what they're trying to achieve, you can get a feel for the pressure and the stress that they may be under. And once you've got that, you can then show that you understand, and you can reflect back the things that they're saying. You say, okay, so it sounds like you need to get this, right? Your bonus depends on you getting this, this, and this. And, you know, it sounds like, okay, you know, it sounds like a little bit stressed about this perhaps, so I really want to support you in this. You know, can we spend a bit more time together working out how I can best support you to achieve that goal, because I want to make really amazing digital products and you need to achieve this goal, so let's spend a bit of time working out a win-win here. And it's like I mentioned before, you're then going to take an equal stand for what you need and what they need. But you can't do that. You won't be able to get the other person on board if you don't show empathy to them first. The other person needs to feel that you understand them and you get them, because otherwise they're not going to trust that you want them to win as well, because they don't feel like you get them. So it's empathy first. Show that you understand them. Talk about what you need. You know, this is my expertise. I can craft something really great here, and I can make it hit all your targets. And if you can come at it from that point of view and the win-win, you're far more likely then to have a really productive working relationship and to get that business stakeholder working in a way that works for you, and for you to work in a way that works for them. We spend all our time complaining about them, but what is it we can do differently? And often, the thing we need to do differently is just show them some empathy and show them some understanding. And then in all your communications thereafter, you say, right, I've been working on this. You told me you need X, Y, and Z to happen because you think that's going to lead to this improve, this uplift in conversions, and therefore that's hopefully going to help you smash your targets, right? Yeah. So I'm really focusing on how do I get you to smash your targets. Therefore, I've come up with this and this.
Mm-hmm.
So you've started by just showing empathy, showing that you get where they're coming from, and then you say, okay, and here's what I'm doing.
Yeah, all of a sudden you've cleared the runway.
Yeah,
it's easier to take off.
But this is all, you know, this is all good in theory, and
yeah.
It's not a silver bullet, by the way. So, and again, when I'm kind of, you know, running my programs and talking about this stuff, you know, make it very clear to people, if you start doing this, you're not suddenly going to have like, oh my God, everything's amazing and there's no stakeholder politics and we're all getting on really well and everything's lovely. But what you do is you increase the chances of getting closer to that.
Mm-hmm.
So things do get better.
Yeah, it's a process as well, isn't it? It takes a while.
It takes time, and it takes constant work at it, and you're never going to get to like a nirvana where everything's amazing, but you can get to something that's better.
Yeah. Trenton, really enjoyed talking to you today about the people part of digital transformation. I've personally taken a lot of value out of the conversation, so thank you so much. Just before we finish, I wanted to ask you if you could share one life or career lesson with the listeners.
Obviously, I've had lots and lots of experiences. All, you know, everything's a learning opportunity, obviously.
Of course.
So right now, obviously, you know, my role is to help boost emotional intelligence within teams. But I've been on a journey myself to get to a reasonable level of that.
Yeah.
And there was many years ago. I used to be late to all meetings, right? Because I'm running a business, I'm busy, I've got loads of things to do, I'm running around. So I was usually late for meetings. You know, never a client meeting, but like internally I was usually late for meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And I was late for this one meeting, as always, and she's going, "Oh, sorry I'm late, just had loads going on." And the other person was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, okay, whatever."
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, sorry, I'm always late for meetings. Yeah. And they responded with, "Well, why don't you just always be on time?"
Yeah.
And it was just this really throwaway comment that I think it's 15 years ago that stuck with me. That absolutely stuck with me. Like, why don't I always be on time?
Mm-hmm.
And it just really got me thinking, like, well, if I'm always late for meetings, what message is that sending to the guys I'm meeting with about the value I place on them and our relationship and their time?
Mm-hmm.
And why don't I just always be on time? Because the thing is, being late for meetings is a power play.
Yeah.
Right? Because generally speaking, the people who are late for meetings regularly, it's not the people who are busiest, it's not the most senior people,
mm-hmm.
It's the people who subconsciously want to be late.
Yeah.
You get plenty of senior people and plenty of busy people that are generally on time to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And that comment, "Well, why don't you just always be on time?" had the most profound impact on me, because it was like, yeah, why don't I just always be on time? Why do I have to always be late? And from that moment on, I've gone out of my way to always be on time. And it's hard, because deep down inside, I kind of want to be late because there's a bit of a power play there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I need to push that aside because of the impact it has on the other person.
And it has, again, it's a knock-on effect, isn't it? Because if people rely on you to be there on time and you get what you need out of the meeting, they get what they need, again, it builds trust.
It does. Yeah. It does. And as I said, culture comes from the leader.
Mm.
And if the leader, through your behaviour, you're basically saying, "I don't value you enough to get to our meetings on time ever."
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's that going to do to everyone in the team as that kind of that value percolates its way through the business?
Yeah. Trenton, how can people get in touch if they want to find out more from you?
Probably LinkedIn is the best way. So when I was a kid growing up, I didn't really like having an unusual name. But now as a grown-up, it's very convenient because I can get really good email addresses and, you know, URLs and so on. So finding me on LinkedIn is pretty easy because I'm Trenton Moss. And there are only two of us out there. There's me in London doing people skills and emotional intelligence. And there's another version of me out in Salt Lake City who is a network engineer. So I'm not the network engineer in Salt Lake City on LinkedIn. I'm the other Trenton.
There's really only two Trenton Mosses on LinkedIn.
Yeah, like fun. We've been in touch with each other, actually.
Really?
It's been quite fun to kind of chat over LinkedIn. Like, "Oh, you're a Trenton Moss." Yeah, so are you.
Very good. Trenton, I've really enjoyed the conversation today. Thanks again for coming on Digital Transformation and Leadership and sharing all of your insights with the listeners. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you, Danny, and thanks so much for having me.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review. Just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.